it is just to forget about it. And I'm saying that the study of Torah is more abstract and therefore it takes more energy, so it's a better type of break than any other type of break that you could take. But if you can't study Torah, you just got to take a break and you just get out. So then, fine. Then that's what you should do. But the second type of advice is more immediate, to deal with the immediate problem right now, just to get out of the situation in the best possible way, so that you could come back refreshed. In other words, the question is how do you know when you're just running away from a problem and when you really need a break? These type of decisions, I mean, there's a certain intuition. It's hard to define the exact line, and by each person it might be different. Certain people could take more stress than others, so for them, they could spend hours in the thing that's giving them stress before they need a break. Another person, their stress level is very short, and in an hour, they got to pull out. So that's an intuitive thing for each person to recognize when it's running away from a situation or when you just really need a break to be able to come out back to think about it, to be clear, to have a clear head to deal with the problem rationally. The next thing is the Matzudas David says that everything is for the best. Everything that happens is for the best. Now, the question is, what does that mean? I mean, it sounds very nice, you know, that, oh, yeah, everything is for the best somehow. You understand? So the question is, what does it really mean? How does it work? Okay? I'll tell you an incident that happened with my son. He came out one day and he had to go someplace and he had a flat. And but then what happened is he tried to change the flat, but it seems like the screws that you tighten the bolts were rusty, so he couldn't do it. He had to call somebody to. It was a whole big thing. I mean, this took like a long time. But then later in the week or a couple of weeks later, he got stuck in the snow. Okay, so in that way, the first thing that happened was a good, because in the snow, he was just out someplace, he wouldn't have been able to do anything, especially since it was rusted in. But now that it was all loosened and greased, it was very easy to change. So the thing is that something bad happens, you can't tell if it's bad. In other words, I'm putting the statement slightly different. You can't tell. There might be some good in this. You see? That's one thing that it's good. Sometimes the good is that you could learn a certain lesson. I mean, there could be many goods, but sometimes what the good is might come about in 2 years. You understand? You don't know. You can't say this is really bad. What you need is a few good examples in your own life where something bad happened and it was really a good thing. It worked out for the best later. But the opposite is also true. When something good happens, you don't know either. So you have to look at life basically and evenly keeled and accept life for what it is. Because you don't know, really, let's put it this way, you don't know till you die if it was good or bad. Because you just never know. You see? So there's no use worrying about it, because this bad thing might be a good thing, and on the contrary, a good thing might be a bad thing. Because if you look at the moment, how you're experiencing it now, so it's either good or bad. But if you want to look at the overall picture, you don't know if it's good or bad. So what are you worrying about? Maybe it's a good. Maybe you'll be a happy man. In 3 years, you'll be the happiest person in the world. I mean, a girl breaks up with you. 2 years later, you meet another girl, and you say, boy, I'm glad I didn't marry that one. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it could work for a girl for a boy, too. I mean, I just identify with boys. Sorry about that. But anyway, but the thing is that you just don't know. That's what it's saying. You just don't know. You cannot attach good or bad to it. again, this is one of the type of ideas that you can't work it out logically at the moment. When you're under stress, forget it. I mean, the stress, you have to take care of the problem, take care of the problem. But then think it through slowly but surely as you get examples again and again. Like somebody just asked, let's say you have a catastrophe, a child dies. Right? Well, there is a possibility your child could have been a mass murderer. All right? You don't know. So therefore, you can't say anything is good or bad. You just don't know the future. Until you die, you don't know the future. So therefore, you can't say anything is good or bad. Even then, I mean, it's a terrible catastrophe. You have to feel the pain. We're human, we feel the pain. But the fact is that whether you could say it's a good or a bad, that you can't. That value you can't give on it. You don't know. It's a catastrophe for me that I lost my child. But however, it could be a good. You don't know. That's a certain attitude that you can't say that this is bad. And therefore, if you can't say anything is bad or anything is good, so you're really running an evenly keeled life. You just accept life for what it is, and you just move on. In other words, when a catastrophe happens, we human beings, we're going to feel the stress. We're going to feel the worry, whatever it is. But however, as we study these different things, these ideas, and as these ideas become real to us, the stress becomes less to us. Whether you can reach a level where it doesn't bother you at all, where you just go through life totally evenly keeled, that's particularly human beings. Sometimes you have to be born with a certain ability, like practically from birth. But you can help yourself to a certain extent to lower the level of stress and worry and this type of pain and suffering. You can. But whether you could remove it completely, that was a rare few people that ever did that. We'll probably have it for the rest of our lives. But we can lower it. You see what I mean? It's not going to change, and it's not going to change overnight. It's going to take years of study from all these. So far, we had two different angles of study. One is the universe or evolution, and two is that you don't know if it's a good or a bad. Now that has to affect you emotionally. If you just know it intellectually, that doesn't help. Now to affect yourself emotionally, that becomes so real that emotionally it really doesn't bother you, that takes years of study. Or at least lower the level of pain when it does happen, as it affects your emotions. To affect your emotions must be going over it again and again and reviewing it and seeing examples. The emotions learned from the particulars, from seeing particular examples, and it's again and again and again. Now the next answer is, a lot of worry comes about through doubt. So in particular, the worry is that you have to make a decision, and you're afraid of the decision because of the future. Okay? That type of doubt. We're talking about a particular type of doubt, where the doubt is you have to make a decision, and you're constantly worried about the decision. You go this way, then this catastrophe could happen. If you take the second one, the other catastrophe could happen, and you don't know which way to go. So the Rabbeinu Yonah says, in that type of situation it takes time to train your mind to work things out rationally. So that, and trust in your mind, that's all you can do. It's not that you won't make mistakes, but Sadyagon says the way a person should relate to thinking. When you think a thing through, you should be 100% secure that when you get through with the result, this is the correct result, without a doubt. But however, when you find out that it was wrong, then you should have enough humility to retract. Okay? So you have to have that security when you make a decision that it's correct. You must. It doesn't mean that it's 100% correct, because you don't know. You really don't know. You're not a Navi. You're not a prophet. But however, you must have security in your mind. And that's all you can do. That will take away the worry. And if something does go wrong, so then you'll retract. And now, let's say, for instance, because something went wrong, now there's a new situation. So now you'll think through the new situation with the security that you will come to a correct decision. And when you think it through, you will be 100% secure that this is the right decision in this situation, until you find out you're wrong. Then you'll have to make a new decision. But there will be times, I mean, if you think this way, you will find that a good many of the times you made correct decisions, and it was correct. If something went wrong, many times you can make a correct decision, but there's factors that it was impossible for you to know, and something went wrong. That you can't take, you can't say, I'm wrong, you know, that was my mistake. I'm a human being. I can only make decisions with the information that I have. I can't make decisions with information that I don't have. You see? So therefore, you must feel secure with the information that you have, that you're 100% correct. But this comes from training of the mind, and that you think correctly, and as you get that security, then you will be secure in your decision-making abilities. Right, the next one and last one is that whenever there is a catastrophe, you could always use it to cure yourself from some type of... in other words, you can use it to better yourself. Okay? There are different ways. One is, if you made a mistake, so then you have to analyze the mistake. First of all, rationally, what was the mistake? And two, if there was some emotion that caused you to make the mistake, you understand? In other words, when anything goes wrong based on something that the way you did it, so then you could always check out why what went wrong. If it has to do with you, so then you could see what trait it is that made you make the mistake, so you know what to work on, not to make that mistake again, or at least be aware of it, so when you're, even if you don't cure yourself, if you're aware of it, you can protect yourself from making that type of mistake. So it's good to find out, even if you can't cure yourself, what caused the mistake, so you can be aware of it. You see? So that's one way. Two, if you're worried, so you have the way emotionally you react to things could show how you feel emotionally about things. You might feel one way intellectually, but emotionally you can feel just the opposite. And especially certain situations bring out different emotions, so it's good to be aware and to know what those emotions are so that you could deal with those emotions. So the thing is, catastrophes are a good, or always a good, in the sense that you could always check yourself out more, because the emotion comes to the fore, and if you become cognizant of it, you become aware of it, you see, so then you're able to deal with it. But if it never came to the fore, you can't deal with it. And when you're making the decision, usually you're not aware of it. But when the catastrophe happens, so then you, if you're able to think back, so when you think back, then you're able to check out exactly what the mistake is, because the emotion is at a high, so you could be aware of it, and you can cure it. Or if not cure it, at least be aware of it, so you shouldn't make a mistake again on that, because once you're aware of it, you can protect yourself better from making that type of mistake. Or to cure it, either way. So this last one is, the benefit really falls under the category of everything is for the best in a particular way, okay? In a very particular way, it falls under that category of everything is for the best, because in every situation, you can always cure yourself. But the problem is that you have to cause yourself pain by looking at your faults. That you have to have a lot of guts. You understand? That's really... But the thing is, in the long run, that would be a great benefit. Now, there could be that sometimes for some people, the conscious method does not work. This is, the conscious method means that you think it out rationally and work it out, but sometimes it's an extremely deep problem. If it's a very extremely deep problem, then you have to investigate the emotion itself. To cure yourself then it means uprooting the emotion that's causing it. And therefore, it takes a different type. It's not a conscious investigation, but an investigation of the emotions. The question is, what happens to a person that doesn't live this type of life, that doesn't do this type of analysis? Then it's totally dependent on their personality, okay, that you might look at. And two, it depends on their lifestyle. Certain lifestyles tend to bring out more worry than others. So there it's just a matter of playing Russian roulette with your life. Depends on if you happen to be a person that doesn't worry too much, and two, you don't live a lifestyle that brings out worry. So then you could probably have pretty much a worry-free life, pretty much. I mean, a very big catastrophe could affect anybody, you understand? So, but that's a matter of playing Russian roulette. You just don't know. I mean, it's better to work it out. And besides, this type of thinking have many, many other benefits besides removing just stress. I mean, there are tremendous other benefits that you will see from it. So it's worth doing for that. This is chapter 12, verse 26. And it says the word yoser, which has two interpretations, okay? One is if he overlooks you have to add, this is according to Rashi, you have to add the word emotions. He overlooks his emotions when it comes to his friend that's a tzaddik. And the way of the wicked is they will err. They'll make mistakes. In other words, if a person overlooks his traits in regards to his friends, his own personality, in regards to his friend, that's a tzaddik. And the ways of the wicked is that they will make mistakes. The first question is what is the first part saying? What does it mean, overlook your traits? Okay? Overlook your emotions. In other words, let's say, for instance, you do something to hurt me, and my emotions say, I should punch you out. But then I say, no, that's not right, that'd be unjust. Well, my emotions say, I should tell you off. And I say, well, that's unjust. So I do that, I overlook my desire and do that which is just. In other words, what does the first part have to do with the second part? Okay? The answer is that the Russia make the wicked person lives by his emotions, his personality, whatever his personality dictates, that's what he does. You see? While the tzaddik is not a person. There are levels of tzaddik where their emotions are totally in line with justice. But you can be a tzaddik. You can be a tzaddik despite the fact that your emotions say to do evil. You might not be on the level to be in line with your ideas. But the tzaddik is a person that lives by his ideas. So this pasuk is saying that the definition of a tzaddik is a person who overlooks his emotions. He overlooks or forgoes his emotions. Okay? But the tzaddik is a person that is totally a wicked person is totally guided by his emotions. Right? The question is how could you know when your emotions are working or when your logic is working? Okay. The first step is that you must analyze all actions, whether they're just or unjust, and know why they are just or unjust. until you think that way. In other words, there's a lot of Sukkim and Mishlei that deal with that. And then as you get to know, then there's the many areas of Torah that they discuss ideas of justice. And as you start getting knowledge of justice and what is a just act and what is an unjust act, you start thinking that way. So then you're able to compare your desires versus what the mind thinks out. For instance, I mean, in Lashon Hara, I mean, gossip. I mean, you have to know the laws when you're allowed to gossip and when you're not allowed to gossip. So then you would know that. In other words, there are times when you can hit a person, okay? I mean, you're allowed to protect yourself, okay? There's an education, there's other ways of punishing students, okay? There's certain rights. But you have to make a distinction when you just... when your emotions are awakened and you're just taking vengeance or you feel like hurting a person and you fake yourself out and you say, I'm only teaching you. You understand? You have to make these distinctions to know the difference. I'm not saying it's easy, but you got to start thinking about it. And even if you make mistakes, as long as the mind is thinking about it and you're aware of it, so then your mind is open for new ideas. We're going to do Pasuk Chavav again, Pasuk 26 again. According to the Ibn Ezra, he translates it slightly different, and he translates it, more than his friend is the righteous, and the way of the wicked makes mistakes, causes mistakes. Now the first question is when it says... more than the righteous has more than his friends. What does it mean? He has more. Who's his friends? What is he talking about? The first part is talking about the righteous in relationship to his friend, and the second part is talking about the wicked, and that he makes mistakes. Fine, but what does one thing have to do with the other? Okay, let's just say. Just for argument's sake, just to start us, let's say that we're measuring the tzaddik with the rasha. Okay, at least then we could get a start here. Now, the tzaddik has more than the rasha, and it tells us what the rasha has. He makes mistakes, right? But the tzaddik doesn't only make mistakes, he has something more. In other words, there are two things here. In other words, if I would measure the tzaddik with the rasha, there are two qualities that the tzaddik has is better than the rasha. One is he doesn't make mistakes, which the rasha does. And two is that he has more. Okay? So whatever the more is, so it's two things over the... it would be two things over the wicked. Now the question is, who's his friend that he has more than? If his friend is a tzaddik, then how can he have more? There's two tzaddikim. How can they have more? Insofar as the... I understand one tzaddik might be greater than another, but insofar as the species called righteous or tzaddik, that's all what we're saying, that species has more. That group of people have more. Okay, so it can't be another righteous person, because it doesn't, and the pasuk doesn't help us in measuring one righteous person against another. How to measure? It just says more. So Re'eu must be something else. What could the friend must be something else? What is the friend? Okay. We have to say that the tzaddik's friend cannot be a tzaddik. And he cannot be a wicked person. That would that wicked person, he would not be friendly with a wicked person. So the question is, who's left? There is what is called mediocrity. Mediocrity means it's between the tzaddik and the rasha. Basically, it's a type of person that has not made a decision. In other words, let's put it this way. the tzaddik changes his personality to go towards righteousness. The wicked person changes his personality to go beyond which he can do, so that he goes further into wickedness. In other words, when you're born, you're not born wicked. You're born a human being. But then as you make decisions, you can start moving outside your personality. What you couldn't do 10 years before, you could do 10 years later. So mediocrity is a person that basically does whatever is within his personality. He doesn't make a decision to go either way. And basically, it's the type of person that follows society. Usually, he's in society, he joins society, and he doesn't make a decision, but society makes decisions for him. But he doesn't make decisions which way to go. It's the society. If he happens to live in a good society, so he'll be a good type of person. If he happens to be in a wicked society, he'll be a wicked type of person. Okay? That is the person that the tzaddik can help. That could be a friend. You see? Now the tzaddik has something over him. Okay? In other words, like this. Mediocrity has a mind, and maybe he'll think correctly in certain situations, in business, practical, different practical things, he'll work things out practically. However, mediocrity, so that's mediocrity, right? But the tzaddik has more than that, because he is removing emotions that affect him. In other words, mediocrity will make sometimes correct decisions, sometimes incorrect decisions, based on the situation and based how the emotions or the society affect him. You see? So the tzaddik has more than him, because he removes his own emotions and trains himself to think correctly, while the wicked person is moving more towards the emotional and going further and further, making decisions further and further into the emotional. You see? So there's three levels of evaluating. There's three levels in this evaluation. There is the tzaddik, which removes things that make him make mistakes. There's the mediocrity, which will sometimes think things out correctly, and sometimes the emotions will affect him. And the wicked person that's moving in direction totally where the emotions run his life. With Perek Yud, chapter 13, verse 4, and it says, "He who desires and there is not, his soul is lazy." He's a lazy person. "And the life of the diligent to do shun will become fat," like a healthy type of satisfaction. The question is like this. There's a lot of people that want something, that want things, and they can't get it. So just because you can't get it doesn't mean it depends what the object is. And the pasuk doesn't say what the object is. Okay? That's the first question. The next question is what's the difference between a lazy person and a diligent person? Okay? Now, the question is like this. Let's say there is a person that's a murderer. He really would love to murder, but however, he's too lazy. Okay? Now, would you call that laziness? A person wants to insult somebody, but he's just too lazy to speak up. You know what I mean? I want to know if you would consider that laziness. So one possibility that they want to say that maybe sometimes laziness is a good thing. If Hitler was lazy, we'd have a better world today, right? So sometimes laziness is a good thing, okay? Then why does the pasuk put them down? And the Torah in general puts down laziness. It should make that your distinction. The Torah doesn't make that distinction. Whenever they talk about laziness, they always put it down. The question is that there are people that go into business. They were very diligent and worked very hard, and still they lose their business. Okay? So the question is, the pasuk seems to be not in line with that idea. Okay? Right. The answer to that question is like this. The book of Mishle is how to live the correct life and how to do everything in your power to be successful. But however, there are factors outside of your ability. I mean, the facts that you don't know, and there's information that you might not know, whatever it is, and you cannot get this information, and so therefore, because of that, or circumstances that change, it's impossible to predict. That type of problem does not belong in Proverbs. That's where we rely on God. In those areas, we turn to God. We're obligated to do the best of our ability. Mishle is only talking about success insofar as within your ability that you can do. You see, but if there is a failure, not because of you. That is not the realm of Mishle. That's a totally different question. In fact, the difference many times between a chacham and a fool is the fool, when he fails, he blames himself and condemns himself. The chacham will investigate to see if he made any mistakes. If he did not make any mistakes, then he will accept reality for what it is. If he did make a mistake, then he will try to correct. He'll find the cause of the mistake and try to correct, because that is within the realm of Mishle, what the human being can do. So if he made a mistake, so then he'll have to get involved in undoing that mistake. That's a Mishle type of problem. But if he did not make a mistake, then he has to accept reality for whatever it is. Insofar as the question of a lazy person that let's say a murderer, right, and he's too lazy to murder, so the question is that considered laziness? You have to understand the difference between the laziness that the Torah is talking about and laziness of the world. Laziness of the world is where there are two emotions. There's a demotion to do a fantasy, and there's a motion not to do the fantasy. That's a different concept than a person where there is a realistic reason to operate, and a non-real, and then if for some emotion you do not want to operate, that is laziness. Laziness, according to Torah, is only where it's against reality. But however, if it's one emotion against the other, in other words, the emotion of murder, or I'm too lazy to get up this morning to go out to murder, see, so that's only one emotion against the other. You might use the term laziness, but it's a different concept of laziness than what the Torah is talking about. Okay. If, let's say, for instance, somebody wants to steal, and then a religious emotion tells them not to steal, so there's two fantasies, but that's not laziness. Laziness is because there's one part of me that wants to do it, there's one part of me that doesn't feel like moving. I don't feel like doing that which I feel like doing. I have a feeling to do something, I want to do it, but yet it takes a certain amount of exertion, and I don't want to exert, okay? But then there is a non-exert, so it's still one emotion against the other, but a non-exertion against reality, that is an emotion against that I don't feel like living in the line with reality. It's a different type of laziness. The Torah's view of laziness is where I desire to do the practical. I want to go to business. I want to make a living. It's a practical thing. Everybody must do it. But it's too much work. I have to go to college, and then I have to go looking around for a job, and then I have to get up on a certain time every day, and I have to be in the office, I have to dress a certain way. All these things, I just can't be bothered. So therefore, I don't bother doing it. Insofar as the act of laziness, there is really no difference. The motive is the same. I don't feel like exerting myself. Okay? There's really no difference. But however, on the opposite end, one is reality and one is fantasy. That makes the nature of the laziness different. In other words, the Torah doesn't look as one. In other words, like we said, it's not a bad thing. I mean, if a murderer is lazy, that's good, practically. Not for a soul, but it's good practically. But insofar as the soul is concerned, there's absolutely no difference if he's lazy or if he goes out to kill. It's the same thing, because the soul is not perfected. But insofar as reality is concerned, it shows the difference between a good soul or a healthy soul and I won't use perfected, because I'm talking about the even practical things like in everyday life. At least the soul is in line, the person's soul is in line with reality that he has to make a living. Okay? There's certain practical things that he has to do, and he does it because it is reality. But if he doesn't do it because of he is reality, we don't care. That is not the laziness we are talking about. In fact, before that, he asked the question, difference between a lazy person and a diligent person. A diligent person is a person that's in line with reality. And because of reality, he lives that life. And a lazy person doesn't recognize that reality because it's in the future, so he doesn't recognize it. You see? So, in fact, to remove laziness from reality, the way to remove that type of laziness is just show him the reality of and educate him in the reality of that area, so then that can help overcome his laziness. Unless it's a chronic type of laziness, then he needs psychological help. Hey, a little clarification. In other words, the difference between see, when you have two opposites, you can have the two different subjects. If you have laziness versus reality, that's one subject, and laziness versus some other fantasy that you have, some other desire that you have that's not in line with reality, that's a different subject. It's a different subject altogether. The term laziness is in relationship to something else. So therefore, it has a different concept itself. Right. We know that all opposites have a certain subject. Okay? In other words, if I say hot and cold, what is the subject? Temperature. Okay? Now, we have two different opposites here. We have laziness. I'm too lazy to carry out my fantasies. In other words, desires which is not in line with reality, okay? And then I have a laziness which is not in line with reality, okay? Now, I say there should be two different subjects, okay? What are the two subjects according to the two types of opposites? In other words, just like work. In other words, many people ask the question, well, today on Shabbos, it's putting on a light is not work, you see? They're wrong. They don't know what the work means, okay? Physical work, if your heart is beating, it's working. You're working, right? You blink your eyes, that's work, okay? So the thing is, you use up energy just living, you know what I mean? So that's work, physically. Psychologically, you can play football for 5 hours. That's not considered work. Parents ask you to take out the garbage, that's work. psychologically. Halachically has a different definition of work. So insofar as halacha is concerned, you could pick up a table and actually sweat and carry it around the house. That's not considered work, according to halacha. But however, if you put a hanky in your pocket and walk out, or put on a light, just switch on a light, that's considered work. So you see, they have a different definition of work. Basically, it's creativity. You're creating something new. Okay? So the thing is, each subject has a different definition. So I say that the same thing here with laziness. If we find what the subject of laziness in relationship to to your fantasies, to your desires, to your addictions, so that's one type of laziness. Okay, then there's laziness insofar as reality. That's a different type of laziness. Okay, so I'd like to know the two subjects of these two opposites. The question is why do I hold that it's two different subjects based on the subject? Why not just accept that the laziness is one definition of laziness, which is where I don't feel like doing or carrying out that which I desire, okay? And it would make be no difference in the definition of laziness, but practically there would be a good result. If you're a murderer, so then that's a bad thing. If your desire is to build, so then there's a certain goodness because you're benefiting others, even though it's only a fantasy. That desire is a fantasy, okay? So then it's a good thing. Or if I live in line with reality, so then it's a good thing that I'm not lazy, okay? So the question is what forces me to make two different subjects? Matt wants to say like this, and that would really answer the question. In one, where the emotion of laziness and the fantasy to do something, and the emotion of laziness takes over, so it is really one emotion against the other. So it's a question of the person says, look, I don't feel like doing this. You understand? Now, it's not a conscious decision, so therefore he will always fantasize of the good. I mean, the fantasy will still be there, but however, it's just a conflict between one part of the emotion versus another emotion. Okay, that's it. However, insofar as what the Torah talks about, I'll try to explain it. The question is, what is a chacham? A chacham is a person that's able to make a decision, even though his emotions are awakened now, but because of the consequences, his mind is able to decide not to do it. And I'm not talking about where the conscience prevents you. The conscience prevents you, that's again one emotion against the other. I'm talking about where the mind itself, tells you that that you should not do it in that moment. See, that's a chacham, where you can make a rational decision despite your emotion. You see? Now, laziness in relationship to reality is a lack of recognition of the reality. In other words, you don't recognize the consequences of your actions. You don't live by the consequences of your actions, but you only live for the moment, for the what you're feeling right now. In the first case, there are two different emotions. There's the emotion to murder, and I'm too lazy to go out to murder somebody. So it's a matter of one emotion over another, you see? But over here, laziness has a totally different definition, because over here, laziness is a result of a lack of understanding that he doesn't live. He might know the consequences, but consequences are not real to him. So a lazy person is a person that doesn't live by his mind, and so therefore he doesn't do that which is correct. In other words, insofar as murder is because that emotion took over and he lacks the knowledge of the reality, and therefore that's also a laziness, because he doesn't get involved in, if he recognizes that he should get involved in the world of learning and he doesn't, you see, that person is lazy, even though he might be energetic. Based on our definition, an energetic person, and he goes out to work and work very hard, and he puts in an effort and he's successful. But however, he knows that he should be studying truth and reality. So then that person is, insofar as we're concerned, he's lazy. He's too lazy to get involved in the world of learning and to put his energy in there. He's lazy because he doesn't recognize reality. So therefore, I'm saying the two definitions of laziness is two totally different definitions, and therefore they're two different categories. In other words, back to laziness. In other words, one definition of laziness is that I don't live the life of reality. It's just a matter of one emotion against another. Do I feel like murdering? Well, I'm too lazy to get dressed today. You see? They're two different emotions. So laziness is one definition of laziness. The other definition of laziness is that I don't recognize reality. In other words, I'll give you an example. Let's say, for instance, I know that it's important to work, but I don't recognize the importance of that you shouldn't steal. So when I work, I'll cheat or steal. You understand? But I recognize that I should study Torah, that Torah is against this, and maybe if I studied Torah and put my energy into Torah, I'd be able to find out whether stealing is worth it or not. But I don't bother. You see? That, even though I'm very energetic in my business, insofar as the reality, I do have the Torah type of laziness, which is I don't recognize and I refuse to get involved in an area that will help me see the consequences of life and become a chacham. It is possible to know the subject in your mind, but however, it's not real to you. In other words, a person could know that stealing, and he could even prove it. He could have a class and actually prove that stealing is wrong. You see, and use it. But it's not real to him, and he'll go out and steal. You see, so it's not real to him. That's a chacham is when it is real to you. If it's not real to you, then you're still in the realm of laziness. It's not real to you. It must be real to you. Okay? Chacham and living according to laziness is impossible. That's a contradiction. It's like two opposites existing in the same place at the same time. It's impossible. You see? But a person could have knowledge, but he's not a chacham. Because he doesn't live by his wisdom, but he lives by his emotion. It means it's not real to him. A pasuk hey, verse 5, that's something that is a lie, the righteous hate, and the wicked, yavish v'yachpir. Yavish is a hifil. Hifil is causative. He causes embarrassment, and he causes the Mitzvah Tzio says, he causes shame and disgrace. Okay? One is embarrassment and one is shame and disgrace. Okay? What are the questions? I think the essence of the pasuk is the question of what is the Vashekar? Something that is false. Okay? There are a few possibilities. There is talking falsehood or the idea of falsehood. You understand? There's different aspects of falsehood. You understand? Question is, which aspect of falsehood is the... And if there are more aspects. I mean, that's what you got to think about. There are more aspects of falsehood. And all the different aspects. I just gave you two examples. But all different aspects of falsehood and which one the pasuk is talking about. The possibilities that Matt is mentioning is, let's say somebody lied to you, somebody cheats to you, or he gives you a wrong idea. Okay, either through words or the way he lives his life. Right, fine. Now, the thing is, all those three are true. You're trying to get across a false thing. But if you lie to me about a fact, let's say you say somebody lives on such and such street, and really you lie, really lives on a different street. In other words, you have to understand what is the harm. You understand? I might walk extra.
But the thing is the real harm is always in the soul. In other words, the physical, there are certain harms in the physical, but the ultimate destruction of the human being is the soul, that if he has a wrong view of life, then the way he operates in the physical world will be a catastrophe. He'll pay all the consequences for his actions. You see what I mean? So therefore, the ultimate. So we have to understand, you're mentioning the three different types of things. Now, somebody cheats me, so I'll lose money, and maybe if I lose money, I might not be able to learn as much, which is a harm. But however, as long it's still not going to affect the way of your life, I'll still look at the situation in a rational way and start making decisions. But if you affect my soul, then that's a whole different ballpark. I mean, that's my very essence, okay? Because we're talking about tzaddik here, okay? We're talking about tzaddik in Russia, okay? So the thing is the pasuk talking about any one of those? The tzaddik just naturally ate to all of them? Well, no, the pasuk is talking about the particular case that the tzaddik is talking about. And which one and why? I'd like to tell you over the introduction to the Meiri in this pasuk. He has a very interesting introduction. He says, I already explained that the knowledge of a thing that is bad, that it is bad, is half of Musa. And also the knowledge of that a thing that a good thing, why it is good, is the other half. Okay? And therefore, King Solomon, in all his writings, he never wrote a definite or absolute a command. Never wrote a command. But he only made known the thing, the good, why it is good, and to awaken in man that he should do it, and the knowledge of something that is bad, that it is bad, and the observation or understanding that you should prevent from doing it. Okay? So here you see that there is the halacha, which is basically a command, and then there is the reason why you should do things. You see? That is where perfection of the soul comes in. Perfection of the soul is the knowledge of why things are good and why things are bad. And here the Meiri says it openly, I mean, that this is the whole book of Mishlei. We're interrupting this discussion to have a side question. Now, the side question in general is about pleasure. The question is that should a person give up the life of pleasure, all types of pleasure, so that he should have a life of learning, something like Rav Shimon ben Yochai, who moved into a cave for around, 11, 14 years, something like that, okay? So, should we do the same thing? That is basically the question. The answer is that the Torah is against addiction, okay? Torah is not against the physical world. All of Mishlei is where the cause of addictions. And first of all, let me say my definition of addiction is a little more broad than what we have in the United States. United States, it's where you smoke something, you know what I mean, or drink. That's basically addictions. Addictions is where I go beyond. In other words, where it takes over my life and I must do this thing. For example, let's say, for instance, I'm jealous of people and my jealousy causes me to act. In other words, talk lashon hara or something. That's an addiction. If I can't control myself from talking lashon hara, then lashon hara is an addiction. If I can't after studying Mishle, if I can't control myself from that, from doing that which is correct, in line with reality, then something is forcing me to do this. That is an addiction. So what the Torah is against is addiction. Okay? And the first step in dealing with reality is dealing with your addiction. How to deal with that. That's the first thing. Secondly, if you reach a level where your love of learning is greater than your love of the physical, then you make a trade-off. You trade off certain physical pleasures, even though you're not addicted to it. You trade off one pleasure for the greater pleasure. In other words, when learning is not the greatest pleasure, so then you need an outlet for your desires so that you can enjoy the learning of Torah and put all your energy into the learning of Torah. But if you don't have any, if you're not satisfied, you don't have satisfaction, so then you cannot totally put yourself into the learning of Torah. The only time you should not satisfy yourself is when you have an addiction and you're dealing with the addiction, so sometimes rationale dictates that you should give up that act altogether. Sometimes not. You have to know in every case, you have to know what to do and how to do it. That is a separate idea in itself of how to deal with it. But the thing is that the first step, when you first get into Musa, you'll see what the Torah is against is addictions, and the cause of these addictions are unconscious fantasies like jealousy, vengeance, those type of things. Okay? Then that is totally incorrect. Then later, as you develop and you truly have a love of learning, then you make a trade-off for the pleasures, from the pleasures of the physical world, you trade off for the greater pleasure, the pleasure of learning. In other words, when a person is beginning, of course he has to live the life of his pleasures and his, even his addictions, as long as it doesn't stop him from keeping halacha and from learning, because learning is the only way out. But if he cannot, if it affects him in his learning, so then he has to deal with his addiction first. But if he doesn't, if his addiction doesn't affect his learning, then he should continue his learning and let the knowledge of his learning teach him how to deal with his addictions. But the first thing is the training of the mind and to think correctly, so to know how to make correct decisions. That must come first. Then you can be able to have knowledge and intelligence to know how to deal with your addiction. Now, the question is in the Rambam Perek Gimel, Hilchos Talmud Torah, Halacha Yud Beis and Halacha Vav seems to be saying the contrary of what we are saying. He says, so is the way of Torah. Bread and salt you should eat, and water you should drink, and on the earth you should sleep, and a life of pain you should live. And only in Torah you should work or be involved. Okay? Basically, that summarizes everything you have to say, which is contrary to what we're saying. Okay? And the question is like this. What will get you to such a level? The thing is like this. There are two motives which could drive a person to live that type of life. One is the conscience, and one is chachma, wisdom itself. When you force yourself with your conscience, when you force yourself with your conscience, what happens is that you are, what it means is that you're repressing certain emotions. I do know somebody that tried it for many, many years, and he had the ability to contain himself and put in all this time, but it affected him psychologically. It definitely affected him. You understand? You cannot repress yourself for long. For short periods, yes. Short periods, you should. I mean, like you don't feel like going to school, but you force yourself to go in and to learn for a few hours. But you should have a certain amount of break. But But however, so if you do it for the conscience, so then you could force yourself, but in the long run, you're not going to make it. Okay? The only way you could live this type of life is, like I said, that at a certain point, you recognize that the love of learning becomes such a great, such a desire that you're willing to give up other pleasures for it. So then it's, in other words, just like, for instance, you're willing to drive 2 hours to go skiing, to wait online for an hour to go up the ski lift, and then you come down, what is it, a minute and a half it takes you to get down. So you're willing to do all that pain for that moment of pleasure. So the same thing, you reach a level where you're willing to do a tremendous amount of pain to do that which you enjoy, you see, namely learning. You see? But however, if you don't truly love learning yet, and you're first starting out, you recognize the benefits of learning, and you recognize the value, and you do get a certain amount of pleasure, but it hasn't taken over the total life, then you must have outlets for the other part of your physical thing, for the other part of your physical personality, for your psyche. You must deal with that. And so therefore, the Rambam has to be talking about is that's the ultimate result where you should be getting to. But I can't believe that the Rambam would say that a person should force himself. And people can't do it. They're not ready for it. They're just not ready. And it would affect them in a totally adverse way. And it would actually take them away from learning. It would make them hate learning because they realize what they're missing. So even though they won't admit it, their conscience won't let them admit it to themselves, but they recognize what they're missing. And they will come to hate learning. And it's not a love of learning. I mean, it's just a force. You see? In other words, the big problem is that people that are not chachamim and they hear these ideas and they want to be on the level. They want immediate satisfaction. Chacham means that he has to wait. Sometimes he has to wait patiently or impatiently, but he has to wait until he gets satisfied, until he reaches a certain point that he's there. But if you need immediate satisfaction that I am a chacham right now, then that could be catastrophic because you can force yourself to do things that you can harm yourself and it's really not a benefit. The question is that I said before that if a person should not work on their addictions right away, the first, unless it interferes with their learning or their life, but otherwise they should just try and get involved in the world of learning. And one of the beginner's books is Mishlei, which deals with this very subject, okay? So the question is that seems to be contradictory. The answer is, again, you ought to study this book. And first of all, this book is not only to deal with addictions, it's how to make decisions, okay? So it helps you make decisions and learn, you know, decision-making, which a person needs training. That's part of the mind. That's the way of thinking. And secondly, you could study a science even though you're not ready for it. In other words, there's the knowledge of the science, and then there is the application of the science. Okay? Now, you might study medicine, but the first 2 years, you can't apply it. You have to wait 10 years to apply it. So you gain knowledge, but you're not ready to apply it. There's a certain point where you reach where you decide, yeah, now is the time to apply it. As a psychology, you study psychology. That doesn't mean you should apply it. You just know the information. There's a certain point where you decide to apply it. The question is why does the Rambam have to say that you should live a life of removal total of the physical if that's a natural result? Removing yourself from the physical is a natural result of your knowledge, then why does anybody have to mention that? All they have to do is say study Torah, and this will be a natural result. The natural result will be that I don't do the physical. So I don't get involved in the physical. So the question is why does the Rambam have to mention it? And in a lot of places, the people do mention these things. So Matt wants to say that that it is good to know the direction in which you're heading. In other words, when you know the result, how it's going to look, so that in itself helps you get there. Because that knowledge itself, in other words, you have to have that knowledge and simultaneously not let your conscience force you to go there before your time. Okay? But however, that knowledge itself is part of the knowledge which will help you get to that place. Okay? That's basically what Matt is saying. Now, the question is how does it help you get there? In other words, if you know the result, how does that help you get to that result? If it's just a result, if the truth is the result is only because of your knowledge and your learning and your development, so then you will naturally reach there. But how does the result cause you to help you get there? And there is one possibility that the reason why they tell you the result, so it becomes a barometer to recognize when you've reached a certain level. In other words, it's not that it will help you, but it's a barometer to recognize how your learning is. Or two, it could be that, let's say, for instance, there's a motion that's stopping me. I really feel that I should be there, but yet I am not there, and I realize there's an emotion stopping me, so therefore it makes me aware that I have to deal with that emotion. But if I don't know about it at all, then I might think I'm there. I might think, well, this is all I need. I don't need more. So it could be that it doesn't help you get there. In other words, that was our original premise. It could be it doesn't help you, but it is the barometer of recognizing when you are there. And if you are not there in time when you should be there, you should be aware of what's stopping you from getting there and dealing with that. Where we left off yesterday was on chapter 13, verse 5, where it says, "A false thing the tzaddik hates, and the wicked will cause embarrassment." It says he will cause embarrassment, and he will cause also some type of embarrassment or despise. Okay, but anyway, our problem that we wanted to deal with, what is something which is false? What is the false thing that the tzaddik hates? When we talk about a tzaddik, we talk about a certain development of the personality. Okay? There's the first step in your personality change of learning is being a chacham. Chacham is a recognition, is where a chacham is a person that uses the system. He still has his old emotions, but he realizes the consequences of his actions. So therefore, to help him have a better life, he uses wisdom. And so therefore, the chacham is a person that even at the time when a great emotion is awakened, he's able, because of self-preservation and not wanting to suffer the consequences and recognizing what the consequences are, his mind is able to stop him from doing something that would be harmful. That's a chacham. A tzaddik, on the other hand, is a person that recognizes a system and that he is part of a certain system, a social system, and that he has to live part of the social, that certain development where he removes a certain level of his self, where a certain part of the self is lost, or it's a move towards humility, where he recognizes that he's part of a social system and he has responsibilities to a system. To have a response, now, as you know, when you study a system, the only way a system works is if there's no contradictions in the system. There can't be contradictions in the system. right? That's what you always study. Your Tosfos immediately shows you that there's a contradiction between one Gemara and another Gemara. Well, Gemara will show you that there's a contradiction between one Mishnah and another, meaning that the means there's something wrong with the system as we see it now, so we have to change our view of the system, okay, to straighten it out. Let's say this is your personality that you relate to systems, which means that you cannot tolerate anything that breaks the system. What breaks the system? Contradictions to the system. You see? So any falsehood, which is a contradiction to the system, the tzaddik cannot tolerate. You see what I mean? He cannot tolerate based on his personality. It's a development of learning. The book of Mishlei helps you reach a chacham and a tzaddik. Then if you want to go beyond, then the book of Mishlei it could help you a little bit in other areas too, but basically that's where it deals with the chacham and the tzaddik. The chacham is, his development is that he's still his selfish self. So he lives the selfish life, but he sees the benefit of living the rational life. You see, that's a chacham. But however, a tzaddik is a person that he sees the importance of the system. His very nature wants to be part of the system because he sees that the importance of it, you see? So therefore he cannot tolerate any type of falsehood because that's an inconsistency in the system. Let me try it this way. Logically, the mind cannot tolerate contradiction. I mean, if you have a contradiction, you could live with it, but you know but you accept the fact that it's not complete, logically, right? Now, let's say your personality is in line with that idea. So your personality cannot take contradiction. And therefore, any type of falsehood, or that which takes away from the perfection of a system and his own personal system, he can't tolerate where there's contradictions in his own personal life. That's why he has to perfect himself. You see, because that shows contradiction. In other words, inconsistency. That's where his emotions make him do acts or talk or think in a certain inconsistent manner. So therefore, he has to straighten it out because he can't tolerate the inconsistency. But that becomes part of his part and parcel of his personality. Insofar as the second half of the pasuk, who is causing the embarrassment, who is causing the degradation, there are two possibilities. Either the Russia doesn't care about anybody, and it's talking about his nature, or the pasuk could be going back to the tzaddik, that he embarrasses and shows the by showing you the inconsistencies or the emotions, or the consequences of the life of the Russia or of his actions. So therefore, he embarrasses and degrades him, and that way, he's putting down the Russia. So it could go either way. It could either be talking about what the life of the Russia in this area. He doesn't really care about anybody or anything. He doesn't care about truth. Once he doesn't care about truth, so then his emotions do whatever he feels like, and he doesn't care about anybody else. Or it's talking about the tzaddik, and it's clarifying what it means to hate, that he starts showing, it becomes incumbent upon him to show the lifestyle of the wicked to be contradictory, or the consequences of their lives, or the emotional fantasies that cause them to want to live that type of life. So that's what it means that these embarrasses and despises them.